Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is Thursday, August 18th, 2011. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted that you could join me this evening. Tonight, I'm very excited. It's coming up soon. We're launching our new blog after Labor Day, so you should have this, we hope, by the middle of September. We've been working on this for about a year. We're very excited about it. It's a private space for subscribers only. You'll come into the website login and the blog will open up. You will have blog posts that the public readers don't see. We'll be able to post the Solari Report MP3s and with chapters and outlines the way we've been doing for the podcast. So it'll make it much easier for you to dive in and listen to the pieces of interest to you or to go back and re-listen to certain sections again. We'll still use the subscriber control panel for the old archives. It'll take us a while to move those back onto the blog. You'll have the ability to comment on posts, including the Solari Report, so you can post your questions right on the blog and read the other questions and read comments and react to comments, all just subscribers. It won't be available to the public, and then it'll make it much easier for us to give you master links up on your private section of the blog. So that's coming soon, and we hope it'll make a big difference. Again, if you have any problems at all, please call our customer service. Darlene Heckman is excellent. If you're not getting the email updates, if you're having any problem navigating the control panel, just call and we'd love to help. The toll-free number is 888-755-3548, so let us know how we can help. Tonight, Adam Trombley, scientist, physicist, inventor, director of Project Earth. He is one of the people who has had the greatest sort of, he's briefed me on many things, but one on entrainment, and in fact, he briefed me right before one of my most amazing personal encounters with entrainment at an investment conference, which we'll talk about tonight. I've gotten many requests to talk about this subject. It's one of those pretty squirrely things where it's hard to get reliable information. It's hard to find people you trust who'll speak about it. I saw Adam earlier this month and was complaining about the challenges of trying to get somebody to talk about this, and he very generously offered to do it. One of the questions we got from subscribers this week was, how do you solve the debt crisis? Well, one thing is we need to have good information and real transparency, and you can't do that unless you can turn off the entrainment technology and many of the different things that are used to influence us in ways that we don't really realize. We had a couple weeks ago the science fiction movie They Live on Let's Go to the Movies. And, it's a Adam and I were talking about it earlier today, and it's a very sort of B-grade sci-fi movie, but one of the things it shows you is the danger of sort of electronic influence and use of that kind of technology. We're going to go an extra half an hour tonight. This is not a simple topic. We can't do it in a short period of time. So it's going to be a long conversation. If you can't stay with us tonight, we'll have the MP3 up by tomorrow, and I really encourage you to listen to the whole thing because it's a big topic, and it's a topic where it's there's not a lot of information that we get day to day about this, so there's a lot to cover. I have one very simple goal tonight, and that is to help you understand that this stuff is real. It really exists. It's used to influence people, and I want to make sure that you just have the emotional recognition you need to know that this stuff is real. And you need to make sure when it comes to anything that can touch your health, your money, your time, you really need to be discerning and be careful about what you listen to and just understand that this stuff can have an influence. Our theme tonight is the global reset button has been pushed. As you look at the news and the markets and the economy, it's clear if you step back that the shift between paper assets and fiat currency and gold is happening. We've seen gold run up quite a bit this week. I talked last week about a wonderful piece that Brian Rogers had written that I posted up on the blog about the sort of coming play from gold to real estate. And if you step back and look at the broad sweep of history, what we've watched is the housing market and real estate market was bubbled at the same time that gold was suppressed. Now gold is being allowed to rise at the same time that the housing and real estate has collapsed. And just as money was pulled out of real estate at the high to buy gold cheap. We're going to watch gold rise, and then the flip back into the real estate and a lot of other tangible assets is going to happen. So, you know, we're watching a sort of pump and dump of gold and land and real estate that's offsetting each other. And as gold rises, we're coming into a new shift. When that happens, I don't know. One of the questions we got from a subscriber through the webinar software this evening was, is it too late to buy silver? The answer is no. This reset is far from over. Another way of describing my sort of theme for tonight is the beginning is near. I was visiting with a client in California who showed up with a T-shirt on the front that said the beginning is near, which I loved. Reminds me of one of my favorite expressions from the musician John Cage, begin anywhere. As things fall apart, we're going to be letting go of the system, and that helps us find a place of renewal and a place to begin. Here in Tennessee, I've watched the Sanders family and the folks at the farm literally move out onto a piece of dirt and start with almost nothing and begin and literally build worlds. So just remember, consistent action towards a positive direction is a force multiplier, and you know, there's good in the global reset button getting pushed because we can let go of a lot now. Money and markets. Equity markets continue to get hammered. Just when we thought we sort of over the worst volatility and drops, a little more quiet at the beginning of the week, we're down almost 500 points again today. The Dow closed at 10,990, gold at 1823. Now, what that means is for this year, the Dow is down 5% for the year, and gold is up 30%, and that's being up 29% for last year. So at the beginning of the year, it took 8.2 ounces of gold to buy the Dow. Today, it costs 6 ounces to buy the Dow. That's a big difference. In the Who's Zooming Who category, we see the Department of Justice announces that it's investigating whether the nation's largest credit rating agency, S&P, improperly rated dozens of mortgage securities in the years leading up to the financial crisis. Now, the ridiculousness of this headline is really hard to underscore. DOJ is attacking the S&P, or Standard & Poor's, for literally not attacking the Department or the United States government during the housing bubble, which, of course, it should have, but now it's attacking. Now that S&P has downgraded the United States for not doing what it should have done and which S&P should have helped it do, the Department of Justice is attacking S&P. Now, who runs the Department of Justice? It's Eric Holder, who had a critical role to play in engineering the housing bubble to begin with. Eric Holder. So for Eric Holder to attack S&P for not being tougher on the mortgage market, I mean, it's just the height of hypocrisy. For more on Eric Holder's role, you can read the story I wrote, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits. But Holder had a great deal to do with sort of getting the clean team out of Washington. So it's you literally feel like you're watching the tapeworm eat its own tail here. Europe decides to make matters with more centralization. We see France and Germany coming out calling for a new economic government for Europe with mandatory balanced budgets for all Eurozone members. If you really dig down and look at this, you know, just when centralization hasn't killed, you know, everything in the economy, they announce more centralization. So it's kind of like a spiral down or a spiral up, if you will. And perhaps the best vote of confidence for the Western banking system this week, Venezuela announces that it's going to repatriate $11 billion of gold reserves held in the Bank of England and other first world institutions. So Venezuela is taking physical possession. We'll see if that really goes down. August 20th is Ron Paul's birthday. He's doing a money bomb to celebrate his birthday. I, of course, am donating. We could tell from last week that somebody is seriously afraid of Ron Paul. He finished second place in the straw poll in Iowa and got absolutely no media coverage. Even Jon Stewart did a comedy routine on it. It was so pronounced. There was a tremendous amount of news about Rick Perry, governor of Texas, who's announced he's running for governor, I mean for president, and it's pretty obvious from watching the media that instead of seriously running for president, he's running to block Paul, particularly in the media, for which no doubt the Republican Party will be very grateful. But Paul continues to pull the rabbit out of the hat despite the absence of media support. We are very excited. We launched our first iPhone app. We put out a new update on it this week. It's the Silver and Gold Calculator that's now available at iTunes/Apple Store for your iPhone. So if you want to do currency on the Just Do It method, you don't need to get a community currency group together. You don't need to agree on prices. You don't need to agree on anything. You just need to have a calculator and be able to do it. It works in about 20 different global currencies. So feel free to leave a rave review at the Apple Store. Our hero this evening is Dennis Kucinich. He gave a great speech on Social Security. It's up on the blog. Dennis Kucinich started off backing the mayors up the banks up in Ohio when he was mayor. And he just keeps doing it. How he does it, I don't know. He never seems to give up, but I'm very grateful that he does. Anyway, but check it out because it's a very good and very short video on Social Security. Okay, that's it for Money and Markets. Ask Catherine. One of the questions we got was, what do you see as solutions to the debt crisis? The debt crisis is a symptom. It's not a problem in and of itself, and in fact, it's not a crisis. If anything, it's the result of a fraudulent inducement and intentional reengineering. So we have a political problem, not an economic or financial problem. And I think you have to remember that. But if you just want to look, because I could do a whole Solari report or a whole series of Solari report on real solutions, one of the most important solutions that I talk about a lot is transparency. Because before you can come up with real solutions, you need to have a real conversation about what's going on, including all the money that's disappearing into the black budget and all the money that's being spent to suppress technology, which could radically increase productivity and radically reduce expenses for everyday people and households. So transparency is absolutely critical, and that's one of the reasons I'm so delighted that Adam has agreed to talk with me tonight, because you can't have real transparency when everybody is struggling with huge amounts of entrainment and subliminal programming and all sorts of dirty tricks to influence our conversation. The second thing you need to have in addition to transparency is respect for individual rights. And that's by everyone, not just governments, not just investors. If you look across the first world, there's an enormous number of people who are making money doing something that harms someone. So I live in a community where we have lots of farmers who go to church every Sunday, but proceed to grow and harvest GMO food that goes into the food supply, knowing full well how dangerous it is. If you look across the whole economy and how many people helped engineer the housing bubble in every community. So we really have reached sort of a cultural ethic where if it makes money for us, it's okay to do. And if it harms us, it's not okay. And that's really not the basis of a sound economy, and it's certainly not respecting other people's rights. So as long as we all have a cultural ethic that it's okay to make money doing something that harms somebody else, nothing is going to work. The third thing we need is we need a new investment model. I have a lot up on the blog about the Solari model, but we need a model based in equity that optimizes both the care and tending of places, which is both people and natural resources, and corporations, those organizations that are functional enterprises. Right now, we have only equity for corporations. We don't have equity optimizing places. Finally, we need to integrate new technology, or maybe not so new, but suppressed. There's a tremendous amount in the area of health and energy technology which hasn't been integrated, and there's a tremendous amount we're doing that hurts health and makes energy expensive that we could stop doing. Finally, we need a sound currency. So I won't say any more. Ron Paul has kind of said it all. But those are very broad categories, but they all, of course, start with saying, okay, what's really happening and why are the people who are running things doing what they're doing? Because the true reality of what's going on is so different than the official reality. We've literally reached a place where it's hard to even have an honest conversation. Okay, another wonderful question we got on the pension fund that I answered a little bit last week about the did the pension fund leaders know? What did they know? Why haven't they done anything? I've asked my attorney to help write a special Solari report about the litigation brought by the pension funds on this issue. So we hope to have that sometime this fall. It'll probably take a month or two. But it was a very good question, and inspired by it, we're going to do a special Soleri report, which is how a lot of our special reports get written. You come up with a great question. Okay, so on to entrainment technology, subliminal programming, and financial manipulation. Again, we're going to talk for about an hour and a half on this one. So if you can't stick with us, please, you can hear the MP3 tomorrow. And I think this is a very important topic. My goal is extremely modest. I want you to simply understand that this type of invisible influence and manipulation is going on, and you need to take that into account in your day-to-day life. You can protect yourself from it, but the thing that helps you the most is simply knowing that it does exist and knowing that it's very profitable for some people to use it in a variety of ways. I started to think about entrainment technology and subliminal programming, although I didn't use those words, when I was in Wall Street. Many of you have heard me tell the story that in 1984, I overheard a conversation I wasn't supposed to hear, and they were talking about the kinds of technology that were being rolled out on television, and it scared me to death. And from that point on, I've never owned a television, with one exception. A decorator bought one for me when I worked in the administration. She said, you can't work in the Bush administration and not have a TV, and I promptly gave it away as soon as I left the Bush administration. But I've watched over a lifetime the use of subliminal, all sorts of subliminals and invasive technology get stronger and stronger. I had a practice both when I worked in the Bush administration and then at Hamilton Securities, the company I started after I left the Bush administration, cleaning up enormous financial frauds. And the more I worked at cleaning up really huge financial frauds, billions and billions and then trillions of dollars, I could not explain how some of it could happen without different kinds of dirty tricks, including this kind of technology. I've talked a lot about control files, and I think that was important. But I came to see this kind of technology as something that was clearly involved. When I ended up litigating with the federal government, I was a target of physical harassment. And in that process, really said, okay, I've got to research more. I've got to talk to private investigators. I've got to talk to people who work in the covert operations of a variety of different government agencies or private agencies and learn a lot more about this, and I tried to do it. Well, one of the things that was very interesting during that period was between 2004 and 2006, I spoke to audiences in New Zealand, in several countries in Europe, and in the United States, and I used to survey the audiences just to get a feel for who was in the audience and why they were there, and to make sure what, you know, that my speech really addressed what they come to get. And one of the things I discovered is that no matter what country I was in, my audience typically were people 90% or greater who described themselves as not watching television. So I came to discover that was my audience, people who didn't watch TV. And I think that's not unconnected to the conversation we're going to have tonight. Sure enough, when sort of at the worst part of the litigation, I met Adam. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience for me, who very generously educated me about how to manage numerous dirty tricks that I was dealing with. Adam is a scientist, a physicist, an inventor. It will embarrass him. I always say this. He's absolutely brilliant. He's currently the director of Project Earth. His focus through Project Earth is on zero-point energy and sort of healing the world and the environment, including with the use of new energy technology. He was the co-sponsor of the Phoenix Rising Conference I attended in Switzerland last year, which was so inspiring for me. They had a panel on energy technology, and then we had a workshop on how we could integrate it at a grassroots level in sort of a decentralizing way. He's much more inspiring on energy technology. However, he's kindly agreed to be with us this evening to talk about entrainment technology and subliminal program, because I think that's one of the technologies we have to get out of the way if we're going to get to new energy technology. So hopefully, Adam, are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good. Yes, I'm with you.
Okay, so let's begin. What is entrainment technology?
Well, entrainment technology basically is a technology that exploits a neurological function called frequency following response. And frequency following response was discovered in the earlier part of the 20th century. And in terms of this type of entrainment, was a matter of when the brain hears a repetitive pattern. It can be a repetitive pattern of words. It can be a repetitive cadence of rhythm. Or in modern times, it can be a repetitive acoustic sound coming across a loudspeaker. It can be, it's in a certain wave form, a certain frequency. It may be more effective. It's, the brain will follow that sound. The brain will follow that sound, whether it's monaural or binaural, like or more in surround sound. The brain will fall into rhythm with that sound, and that's what frequency following response is about. It's just kind of a natural tendency that our brains have, a proclivity, and that our brains have. And basically, in the early 1930s, when the Nazi government was taking power in Germany, basically, they created a big stadium in Nuremberg. Albert Speer was the architect. And it was very intentionally acoustically designed to augment and enhance alpha, what we call alpha entrainment. So this is one of the most important first examples of mass mind control. Because what the German scientific community had discovered was, if you played alpha waves to patients who were having problems with their nervous system or psychosis or whatever, or even if they were just anxious, if you played alpha waves to these people, they would become calm. Their brains would fall into a rhythm with the alpha waves. It would adjust their body chemistry in proportion to that. They would feel relaxed and open and therefore more suggestible, which is a part of that, what happens. And so they were able to get thousands of soldiers to line up in neat little rows and listen to Adolf Hitler blather for hours and listen to all these other speakers go on and on as they stood there in the heat. And just with perfect attention, because they were completely entrained. And it was a remarkable demonstration of the power of this technology on a mass scale, but it was very, very primitive compared to what we're seeing today.
Now, entrainment, when you first set me down in a TV set and said that entrainment got you in a state of calm, it got you in a state of pleasure, and that made you open and susceptible to subliminal programming. But subliminal
That's
programming
correct.
Was different. It came in. I kind of think of this as a 1-2 punch. Is that fair to say?
Indeed, yes. Indeed it is.
So subliminal programming would be what?
Well, subliminal programming is kind of the inner modulation, if you would, of the signal that we get entrained with. So here's the thing. You have, like, you're sitting there relaxed in front of your TV, and you've just been watching your favorite TV show, and you have a DVR, and you don't want to watch the commercial, but two commercials into this, you discover you're watching this commercial as if it's like something you've always wanted to see. And that's a perfect example of how entrainment infiltrates our life, because basically this entrainment process gets us to relax our attention and relax in a certain way, so we're not wary, we're not in fight or flight syndrome, and we're not being very discriminating even necessarily at all, because that discriminative faculty has kind of been relaxed away. And so we're sitting there, and then they flash a screen on in front of our eyes. This is the way it started in the 50s in television. They would flash a screen in front of people's eyes, like it would be a card that somebody would hold up that would say, buy such and such a product. I don't want to mention any product because I don't have anybody come and say, oh, wait a minute.
Well, there was a famous one, though, of them doing the test in the movie theater where it said, buy Coke, and then everybody rushed out and went out
to
get Coke. Right.
For a bunch of tests like that, actually, somebody did their dissertation on it. And And basically what they discovered is that they could just flash a couple frames of a movie that was not enough to linger in consciousness so that you knew that they'd said, buy Coke, or aren't you thirsty now, drink Coke. I mean, it was, those are the kind of things that they did initially. And or wouldn't you really rather have a Buick, you know? I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, you know, we could have a good laugh just going through the commercials back then. But the fact of the matter is, there were these weird things that would flash across the screen, and then people noticed. I mean, you know, the marketing department definitely noticed an uptick in sales, and they went, well, let's do more of this stuff. So finally, one time, somebody screwed up and made way too many frames of a subliminal in a rather famous commercial. And there it was. It said, you know, you must buy this product, you know. And uh-huh. And everybody went, and this was in primetime news, and everybody went, what the was that, you know? What was that? And so there were hearings and people, you know, even back then, you see people, it's funny, even before computers, people had telephones. As Buckminster Fuller used to say, it was our first true real-time response network capability. And the telephone was used a lot by people politically back then. We used to pick up our phones and call our senators and our congressmen. We actually acted like responsible members of a democracy. Many of us did. But the fact of the matter is that we really have a situation on our hands right now where we're being told who to vote for, we're being told what products to buy. And even though back in the 50s they had these things flashing across the screen, which were cardboard with black writing on them, and they were a couple of frames, now we've got a whole other level of evolution of it. But they made it against the law. So it is literally against the law to use subliminals. It is against the law to do that in advertising. But the people who are enforcing the law don't even have the tools to know when it's happening, because it is so sophisticated now, and it involves a combination, as you said, the 1-2 punch of entrainment, but putting everybody into a kind of a relaxed state of receptivity, and also not just a relaxed state of receptivity, but now you tweak that a little bit and you also stimulate the buying impulse, which is a certain kind of pleasure that we get when we spend money, and you get people to do this thing because you say, what do you want them to do? I want everybody to vote for so-and-so. And so you make a very pleasant feeling associated to a picture that's actually enmeshed with the digital picture on your television. So there's a picture you don't cognize seeing, and that's the subliminal. And it says in English, it says in Mexico, it depends on the demographic that's being broadcast, Mexican rather, or Spanish. It depends on the demographic that's being broadcast to. It says the words that they want you to do. They command you, basically. They program us to do what they want us to do. We just, you know, it's weird to say this because we've been involved in watching this and researching and measuring it on instruments for so many years. It sounds like science fiction to some people, but in point of fact, it is just an extension of what was going on in the 50s and in Nazi Germany in the 30s and the 40s, all the way through the war. They would line these people up. They used them in concentration camps and coordinated it with their chemical assault on people's will, which is like fluoride poisoning, et cetera. But I'll stop there.
Well, we're going to get to that. I wanted to make sure we touched on the Russians, because the Russians in the 60s were the first to use this as a weapon, weren't they?
Well, yes, they were. It was a serendipitous discovery of some high school kids in the United Kingdom who were toying with, you know, an early radio set in their lessons. And one of the young men turned the dial down really extremely low frequency area, and they started hearing this repeated pattern of a, it sounded like a woodpecker. And the realization when the signal analysis was done later on, there came a realization that the former Soviet Socialist Republics were actually broadcasting entrainment signals electromagnetically through the air, And that it was actually, the people who discovered it it was actually fairly sophisticated technology, and they were exploiting something that they had discovered there with their excellent scientists, I must say, that they discovered that that the brain and the nervous system the human beings have, and that even the water molecules in our blood can respond to certain frequencies at certain wavelengths at very low amplitude, relatively speaking. They don't have to blast you with high amplitude, really loud electromagnetic signal. And in science we call this a femtotesla. It's such a weak signal, it's almost impossible to describe on the one hand, but if you tune it properly and you know what you're doing, and believe me, somebody knows what they're doing, because we've been watching the sophistication of this just in the last 20 years. It's mind-boggling how it's increased.
I'm trying to remember the name of that documentary of the birds that you and I were watching, but birds have the ability to literally navigate as a flock through resonance and through literally a shared intelligence by resonating with each other. And when we were watching, it's called Wing Migration. You and I were watching Wing Migration, I said, Adam, is this how humans communicate? In other words, do we also resonate with each other and with the earth this way? And we were talking about that and the extent to which this kind of technology not only interferes with that, but can cause us to believe we're resonating with each other when we're not. We're resonating with something that's fake.
Sure, absolutely. Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely, that's fair to say. You bet. And you know, we see this. Some of my colleagues, I ran into it at a conference. I met at a conference the first time, and we started talking about entrainment. This is a long, long time ago. And they said, two of them said, well, guess what? We've been studying this, and the Republican Party is using entrainment in a lot of their political commercials. And it's being used to great effect. And I was very interested in that. And I said, anything else? And this is before I really even knew hardly anything about it at all, to tell you the truth. I knew very, very little about it. And they said, oh yeah, well, you know, basically this is happening, and they're stimulating pleasure feelings relative to their candidate and revulsion feelings relative to the opposition. And they were concerned, because they said, as this becomes more and more sophisticated, this is going to be a devastatingly powerful tool. And so there are people who have been watching this. They are a very tight-knit group of people, and they are dispersed throughout the scientific community. I mean, there are a lot of academic institutions, but their primary job, let's say that. This is something that they've all kind of, everybody
kind of
met each
other. No university
will
encourage this kind of publication.
Well, I don't know if no university will, but I haven't been there if there is one. And
right.
That doesn't mean there isn't somebody. But you see, the thing is that once you discover that there is this kind of intelligent, manipulative, mind control kind of agenda going on, when you discover that we are all, to a certain degree, being played on a day-to-day basis, then you realize, I'll be lecturing in Europe, or you'll be lecturing in Europe or wherever, and people will say, well, why is it? It seems that the people in the United States are asleep. Well, I know, because we have the most sophisticated entrainment in the world. We have entrainment
right.
that is mind-boggling.
Right.
And it's coordinated in all sorts of ways. So, yes, you can say they can, you know, and I have to say this, that certain people were shocked and really dismayed that for the first time in the Democratic Party's history, during the Obama campaign, entrainment was used heavily, including in his big, huge auditorium and stadium, presentations. And it's very tempting to do this, because you can keep people's attention, you can get people to be receptive.
I just have to read you a question that came in today, Wow, what great guests you're having on the Solaria Report. I have a question for Adam Trombley. Surely some people are more susceptible to entrainment technology than others. Are some people more resistant to the effects of these subliminal messages, and what traits allow these people to be so? There was a heavy-duty campaign of subliminal messaging to get Obama elected. I would watch some of his speeches, and some of those huge crowds looked just like people in the fundamentalist megachurch, totally mesmerized. It was freaky scary. My friends and I often ask why we didn't fall for the sales pitch and didn't vote for him, including some who are lifelong Democrats. I remember years ago I would see ads for high-interest savings accounts in Iceland. I never would invest in one because I knew it was too good to be true. Is it that some have critical thinking skills, or am I just getting more cynical in my mature years?
Well, Catherine and I were just talking about this earlier today, actually, weren't we?
Yep.
Yeah. It's some people are more resistant, just like some people are more resistant to hypnosis. And there seems to be certain genetic proclivities even regarding that. It also has to do with how much tap water you drink, for example. If you're drinking a lot of tap water, you're much more suggestible. And the reason for that is
because
you're being poisoned with fluoride. Yeah. And fluoride was used, like at Auschwitz, to make people more passive, make them impotent, make them sterile. And, you know, so we have this poison in our water that makes people impotent and sterile, and then we have Big Pharma who is selling lots and lots of erectile dysfunction medicine, et cetera, and a huge industry for people who have difficulty bearing children because they're sterile. This is all a part of the same mentality. It's like, how do you control your market? How do you control your population? How do you control the response vectors of the targets you're addressing? And these are very, very real issues that are considered in those terms by the people doing this.
I'll tell you one thing. When all the Obama stuff was rolling out during the campaign, I'm basically a money person, Adam. So I spent my time in the federal government, or when our company was financial advisor to the federal government, you know, I do the numbers. So
right.
I understand how the money works, and whether it's the math of time or it's the math of money and budgets, I know Obama was saying a whole bunch of stuff he didn't have the power to deliver and was not economically feasible in the current framework. So I just knew, you know, and so one of the things I really say is if you pay attention to the nuts and bolts of the money and the time involved, it's pretty easy to filter out the lies and protect yourself. It's not,
and,
you know,
yeah,
it's not
rocket science once you realize what's happening. If you just start feeling all warm and fuzzy towards a candidate that you really don't like, and you know you really don't like them, then you know there's a problem. You know there's something weird. I mean, I've had it happen. I've fallen into that with more than once. I sometimes recommend people keep a journal, you know. I mean, just a little pad of paper even, and notice when they suddenly feel like buying a certain shampoo that they know they would never put on their head. you know, and I mean, it is, and the idea of how sophisticated it is actually very sophisticated at this point. It's extraordinary, and there's certain things that the powers that be just don't want people to even think about, you know, like free energy,
right,
or a cure to cancer that's real instead of brutalizing people with endless chemocide, you know, things like that.
Right.
I just want to say your listener's question is really, really important. Yeah, and
right.
I just want to loop right back to her question because I don't feel like I fully articulated something. And that is that, yes, there are some people who are more subject to this than others. You have friends, it sounds like, and that's one of the ways that we mutually immunize each other, is to say,
right,
hey, did you notice that I, you know, you suddenly started feeling really good about so-and-so, you know, and you just, and you go, yeah, I noticed that, isn't that weird, you know, and it's kind of like, well, it must be listening to TV, you know, and that's one of the ways that you remain more immune, through a community. Community is an extremely important thing. Go ahead.
Right. It's so important to have friends who are grounded.
Yes.
Anyway, go ahead.
I said, I'm so very grateful for you as a friend, too.
Ah! Well, I'm alive thanks to you, so there we go. Before we go and talk about delivery mechanisms, I wanted to talk about the positive uses, because In fact, one of the reasons to get to understand all of this stuff is to understand there is, you know, there is such a thing called entrainment, and it can be used for the positive. It doesn't have to be used for the negative.
Yeah, and certainly when it was first researched in Germany in the 1930s and the late 1920s, the very first initial thing, 1929, I think, in Munich, but it was first, you know, researched for therapeutic benefit. And eventually in the United States, for example, because of the chief engineer for National Broadcasting System, or NBC in New York, a guy named Bob Monroe, who also was an acoustic engineer who loved developing hi-fi systems of his own in his own lab. And after he was putting test tones through his, trying to find the sweet spot of his laboratory stereo system, he found himself going into altered states of consciousness, and he didn't really understand it at all. He contacted a psychiatrist and neurophysiologist, both from Yale, I mean, same guy, Dr. Lee Sinella, and he said, excuse me, doctor, I think I'm going mad. I am having these really wild things happen with my attention. And Lee immediately flew out, and they met, and Lee said, no, actually, I believe that you're responding to alpha entrainment, because the signal you're playing basically falls into that range, and that you're in an altered state of consciousness, because alpha entrainment changes your neurochemistry, and you will be in an altered state. Sometimes you'll be in a more intelligent and alert state even. So Bob began to experiment with this and created the Monroe Institute, and I did some work there, and a bunch of people have done work there, and it was one of the most remarkable and powerful technologies I've ever seen. I saw people going from really kind of amazingly dissociative states to really open and intelligent states within 4 or 5 days. I always wish that they could play those kind of things at the United Nations or the Congress or something, instead of whatever it is that's making them so stupid. I mean, you know, please play something else. Change the music. But anyway.
It was funny. I discovered today the thing when I get hit or have to do with something that involves a lot of entrainment subliminal programming, one of the things I do to sort of recuperate is go lie down on my QRS. And I found it today that that's what you do, too.
Well, of course it is. Yeah, that's why we... That's
so maybe
why
you could just mention, we should explain what a quantron resonance system is.
Well, there was a gentleman, there were two doctors in Germany, and I met with one of them in 1980 in November. I was introduced to him by Hans Nieper. His name was Dr. Koenig. And he and a colleague of his... basically, we're some of the, two of the first people in Germany who were reviving the research regarding magnetic therapeutics for human beings. And there was another gentleman who I had just met, former Luftwaffe engineer, just a wonderful guy, like Sergeant Schultz on Hogan's Heroes. I mean, just a delightful, just a teddy bear of a human being. I mean, seriously, he was just one of the nicest people I've ever met. But he had discovered that water molecules respond at very low amplitude signal to a very specific kind of waveform. And basically, so we all had this lunch where he communicated to Dr. Koenig about this waveform and how you could make a magnetically therapeutic mat, for example, that would operate at just mere microteslas, very, very, very weak magnetic field, and would get all the water molecules resonating and help you actually disentrain from the entrainment that we're constantly subjected to, because we are constantly subjected to it. Over the harness of your house, even, we've discovered that happens. So the QRS basically is a therapeutic device that has been researched in Germany since 1980 and developed, and it was used on the International Space Station to help maintain a certain kind of electromagnetic integrity in the cells, which tends to get undermined in space. The red blood cells start getting sticky, and basically this induces mild resonance and basically helps the cells have a slight negative charge, rather, on the erythrocytes, on the red blood cells. It's incredibly therapeutic, and it's perfectly non-invasive. The FDA has acknowledged it as a therapeutic device, and it's called the QRS. And it's very important to know about accept no substitutes, because I'm telling you, there's several people out there trying to sell things and saying they're just as good, but they don't use the right waveform, and therefore they aren't nearly as effective. So this is something that can, that literally for people who have the Largesse, or and even you can buy them in a group even. I don't sell them, so I'm not making a commercial for them. I'm just saying you can just, I mean, you know, and I know from using this, that if you're feeling particularly dragged out or entrained, this is something that actually will snap you out of it. And it's amazing. Right. And your blood oxygenates better, your whole body oxygenates better. I mean, there's hardly enough I can say about it. It helped save my life. I know that.
Right.
So,
me too.
But relative to entrainment in particular, this is really a very powerful device, because the water molecule is one of the primary mediums that's being massaged through entrainment, because it's so polar, it's easy to program once you know what you're doing. And believe me, there are, like I said before, there are people who do know what they're doing. So what the QRS does is it erases the water memory. It just clears it so that all these subliminal patterns, which are being held in your body and even in your cerebral spinal fluid and your brain to a certain degree by water molecules having a certain orientation and invoking certain synaptic responses, et cetera, in the brain, the fact is that this basically clears that. And it's remarkable. It's like a self-liberation.
I know,
tool.
Listening to Bach while I do it really clears it.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's jump to delivery mechanisms, because I want to talk about, you know, there's an unbelievable number of ways that this stuff can be delivered. We're not going to talk about them all tonight, but I want to break it down, Adam, between sort of the technologies that are targeted at large groups versus smaller groups within the individual, and then we'll go on to talk about some of what it dovetails with, and then financial applications. So let's look at the large groups. We have MP3s, CDs, DVDs, radios, TV, internet, billboards. So I'll just describe that as media. And maybe if you could talk a little bit about how media works and what you think are the important things for people to understand in that area.
Well, I think it's really important to understand that we all, not all, you know, there's more and more people who now have very relatively sophisticated televisions, okay? They have good stereo, they have high-resolution video, but at the same time as that's true, every time we turn one of these things on, basically, there's a constant carrier background entrainment that's going on in every TV show. And this is, some people think this is fine and this is a good thing to do because, for example, you can be made to have more concentration while you're watching a show. Not necessarily intellectual discriminative faculty, but more attention directed in a certain way. In other words, focused in a way that somebody wants you to focus your attention. So the way the media uses this, again, is to sell. It's to control markets. It's to calm mass panic. I mean, those seem like good things to do. And sometimes, you know, I'm sure that there's people who feel like we don't want insurgency, right? So since we don't want insurgency, let's control the minds of the population. So it's over your radio broadcasts, it's on your television broadcasts. It doesn't mean that you lose sovereignty over your nervous system, but the way we maintain sovereignty over our nervous system is to be aware of this. And as we said before, if you start feeling differently than you know you should be feeling, and you need to be an informed member of the democracy in the first place too. So this is another way of combating it. Like, so if you read, like we started really reading about Barack Obama and how even as a state representative, et cetera, he didn't exactly fulfill his promises frequently. And once somebody at New York Times basically redirected my attention after I'd recommended it to my readers and said, you really need to research this. Well, I suddenly realized that I had somehow or other become entrained the first time I heard him speak in 2004. And it was like, okay, so this is a very interesting thing. The way it's used is to make you or me or any of the listeners out there pliable and pliant. So there are flashes, you know, on your TV screen, for example, which are in a certain rhythm, because you can be entrained not just through acoustic response, But the brain also can be entrained through the optical response. So optical pulsation is coupled with audio pulsation to entrain, to get the brain into a certain state of mind. Okay, and it
happens. So where does it come in? It's not the, if you look at the person making the TV show, they're not doing it. Is it coming
no,
in?
No.
Does it get overlaid on top of it?
Well,
on the signal?
Let's say most people, most producers are unaware of it, but there are some producers who might be capable of getting this done at the production level. But this comes mainly through the big networks and in a kind of coordinated effort, which has frustrated a number of people I've known in the media over the years, you know, because the control room became more and more an isolated place in a certain sense, you know. And
right.
So there's pieces of equipment there that nobody has any idea why they're there, except for one or two people who are control room kind of upper management. And they may not even know why they're really there. Somebody came in from some government agency or something, or somebody came in and said, oh, you need this new piece of equipment. And what we see is this incredible intermodulation. It isn't just a simple, like, waveform. It's like you really need sophisticated spectrum analysis equipment to see this stuff. You really need good gear. You need good equipment. So people should be aware of the fact that these images, for example, can be interpolated, as we say, into a digital image. So if you've ever looked at one of those books where, you know, they say, okay, if you look from in your peripheral vision, you may see this shape in this what looks like chaos. And then you look and, oh, by God, there is that shape there. Or there is that picture of somebody's face there, you know. And in fact, this is done all the time. I mean, this is done a lot, and it is being done more and more the more some people realize this can be done, where subliminals are literally digitally inserted into the context of a picture on your television, and you never cognize. It's not like somebody's holding up a card anymore. This is digitally interpolated into the actual matrix
right.
of that picture.
For a Let's Go to the Movie for tonight, I had encouraged people to watch in the third season of La Femme Nikita, one of the season programs was called Under the Influence, and she's a covert operator, and they want her to pass herself off as the fiance of this terrorist, and so they put subliminal pictures of him in her apartment, but redo his face to look like a guy she's in love with, so that she'll fall in love with him or act like she's in love with him. And it takes till the end of the show, and she goes around her apartment and starts to see where they've put this sort of superimposed face in other pictures, and she rips them all, you know, she ends up ripping all the art off the walls because it's all full of this entrainment stuff. So it's a
yes.
perfect example of just what you're describing.
Right. The entrainment to get you to be open, the entrainment to get you to have pleasure chemistries and the or revulsion chemistries, and then the subliminal to basically, that's the seed that gets planted. You know, it's like you smooth out the furrows of the brain, so to speak. You know, you plow the field and then you plant the seed, and the seed is that subliminal, and that's exactly correct.
It's very interesting. When I was in 1998, I took a course at a wonderful church in Washington, Greater Mount Calvary Holy Church. I took spiritual warfare was the first class, and then there was an advanced spiritual warfare class. And the instructor minister literally brought in CDs and DVDs and showed us how subliminal messages were put in. You know, they'll put in a lower track. You'll hear this sort of, and it's a speeded up sort of subliminal message. And they literally sat there in spiritual warfare class and sort of tried to teach us how we were being brainwashed with CDs and DVDs. And just said, be very, very careful what you're listening to, and you just need to know that there's all sorts of secret messages in this stuff.
Yeah, because this is sub-auditory frequently. I mean, you can be in an environment that you can be 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in train, and you'll never hear a sound unless you somehow or other can get rid of all the traffic noise and get rid of all the other noises that are ambient, because basically we're all in acoustic shock from the noise in our urban cities, sitters, and they're discovering that this stresses out the nervous system so that people are less and less able to function. But the fact of the matter is that we can absolutely pick out the sound. If you stop and listen in a very quiet room, and it is this sound of noise, it's kind of like it's not the benign old hiss of the needle on the vinyl record. It's a whole different kind of hiss, and that hiss basically is articulating things to our brain which we don't consciously hear, but which our brain is incredibly fast, incredibly beautiful processor, and the brain actually connects the dots whether we do consciously or not. And it connects the dots enough to get us to go and, you know, buy a piece of tobacco gum when we don't smoke. You know, maybe in Colorado they're introducing that product right now.
We're dancing to the hum.
You know. We are. We're dancing to the hum to a certain degree.
One of the things,
until we become, until we become aware of it.
Another experience I've had, which is, one of the questions I get on the Solari Report a lot is, I can't seem to reach my family or my neighbors or my colleagues or what, they won't listen to me. And I just wanted to tell a story. I was trying to persuade a dear friend and neighbor to not let her kids and grandkids eat at junk food, you know, processed food. And I gave finally to try and persuade her. I was really lobbying her. I gave her Super Size Me, Morgan Spurlock's wonderful documentary about how eating at McDonald's for 30 days almost killed himself. And she watched it, and she came over, and she said, oh, my God, what have I been doing? You know, I will never let the kids or the grandkids eat at McDonald's again. 3 weeks later, I was taking her grandkids into a museum in Memphis, and she looked at me, and she said, oh, well, they're hungry, so why don't you just stop by McDonald's and get them something to eat on the way? And I realized, Adam, she had completely forgotten. It was like her memory had been completely wiped. Now, this is somebody who really cares about good nutrition and cares about her family. You know, the idea that after 3 weeks she should think it was fine to eat them, I couldn't even fathom it.
Well, it is the dumbing down of not just the American public, but the world public. It is the intentional dumbing down. And so, you know, for example, Fukushima Daiichi goes off and everybody goes, oh, this is like the, you know, a really bad nuclear disaster, and the Japanese government's in denial. And yet somehow or other, here we are with it going off 24/7 and spewing incredible amounts of radioisotopes into the air, and people don't have the attention for it anymore. It's like, oh, whatever happened with that? Same thing with the Gulf of Mexico. Same thing with Super Size Me and eating McDonald's or not eating McDonald's. And I don't want to target McDonald's because I know they're putting salads in, and they really are trying to change their direction. This is an indication of the power we have as consumers also, and how we always are not just under this entrainment. I don't want to just communicate some kind of fear and loathing here, because we are not always going to be subject to this. We get tired of it. We can get, and even your sister, your friend, whatever, these people who have said something like, I just saw something remarkable, and then the next day they said, I don't remember seeing that at all. It's always this thing with masked memories. It's so interesting how the masked memory thing works, and it's such an important part of this conversation, because there's a famous story, and people usually don't like it when I mention unidentified flying objects or things like that, but there was a sighting over the White House, near the White House, several years ago, a few years ago now. And it was a sighting. I mean, this craft was just hovering there, and they scrambled jets and basically it vanished. And a lot of people saw it. A lot of tourists took pictures of it. A lot of people videotaped it. It showed up on the Washington Evening News. It showed up on the Baltimore Evening News. I have friends that watched this. And then, the next week, at exactly the same time of day, in exactly the same location, from exactly the same camera angles that were broadcast on various stations from the tourists, there was a plane that flew over and entered into, you know, restricted airspace near the White House, and had to be escorted off by two F-17s, or F-18s rather. And this is like, what was it? This is a masked memory. And so what people remember is that these two jerks went, you know, somehow flew their Piper Cub into restricted airspace near the White House. How stupid are they? Oh, my God, gee, they were so stupid. And they completely forget that the week before, in exactly the same time, exactly the same spot, there was something that the U.S. government did not care to explain to its citizens.
It's really funny. Oftentimes you'll see a documentary come out that really does illuminate what's going on in a particular area. And then 6 to 12 months, Hollywood will put out a movie with the same name that completely sort of takes the energy away. You know, and that's,
yes,
if you do a search, that's the one you pull up, not the other. So it's, yeah. I mean,
and it's science. Yeah, a lot of science. Exactly. A lot of science fiction stuff will talk around these things. They'll actually go pretty close to saying some of the stuff that's actually happening on the one hand, and then they'll make it so ridiculous. It's like, then you feel like anybody who believes in that must be ridiculous. And it's actually very intentional in some shows. It really is. It's very programmatic. And there are other shows that were written differently, that were more intelligent. And then when the corporate interests start going, hey, wait a minute, we don't like the way this is written, you need to change this, or else we're not going to sponsor your show anymore, then you start seeing these weird changes in the storylines in your favorite TV show that basically tell you that somebody doesn't want you to think about that. You know, somebody doesn't want it, you want you. How many times have you heard a conversation about entrainment on television?
Last year we had Nick Begich come on to introduce HARP, and before I want to go into targeted sort of things that are targeted at selected groups.
Sure.
But just if you could say a minute or two on HARP and how it dovetails with sort of mass mind control.
Well, there's two things I'd like to say, but before I start talking about HARP, I need to mention a discovery that was made. Not by me so much, but we had a gentleman named John Lilly, who was a rather famous scientist, staying with us in 1990 at one of the where my office was at the Institute. And we had a sleeping loft above, and he climbed down one morning, and I just turned on the signal analyzer that I had going 24 hours a day. And not 24 hours a day, but I had it going on any time I was there. And basically, John, there was a certain waveform that would appear on the screen of the signal analyzer. And the reason I'm saying this relative to HARP is this is really important for everybody to hear. Because he says, where did that waveform come from? Now, this waveform, I'm going to try to describe it verbally, it has like a hump, like, you know, you would expect a wave to have. And then it has a long pause, and then it has a dip, which is the other side of the wave, and then it has a long pause, and then it has a hump, et cetera, et cetera. He says, I asked you a question, where's that waveform from? I said, it's from the power grid. And he said, the power grid? I said, yeah, we have this hooked up to the harness of the house to neutral because we use the neutral loop as an antenna. And he said, oh, that's interesting. He said, so this is actually really on the power grid. Is it just at this house or is it other places? I said, no, we've measured it in several states. And he said, oh, that's really weird. He says, I invented that waveform. And he had actually invented the waveform to help control the behavior of dolphins in 1958-59 and a National Institute of Health project under contract to the U.S. Navy. And basically they were implanting dolphins' brains and discovered if they used just a pure sine wave, the dolphins would go into epileptic seizures because they weren't giving them their brains time to fully respond and integrate the information carried on that wave. So the pause is that what we call response vector pause in the wave. And he said, oh my God, this is on the grid. This is on the power grid. They're using my wave, which I discovered. He says, talk about unintended consequences. He says, I discovered this and I abandoned the program because I didn't like what we were doing to dolphins because I love dolphins. And he said, he was really having a hard time getting his head around the fact that this wave that he had discovered was now being used through the power grid on everybody who uses utility power. And we found this in state after state after state, and it's a very sophisticated form of entrainment, basically, that is electromagnetic, and it's coming through the harnesses of your houses right now. And I wish everybody could have isolation transformers and just edit it out, but you should be aware of the fact, I mean, I know this is a bit, but so this, why am I mentioning this relative to HARP? I'm mentioning this relative to HARP because we found this same waveform being broadcast by HARP. We found the same exact waveform being broadcast by HARP, but what we found being broadcast by HARP was much, 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 much more sophisticated. In 1994, a colleague of mine, David Farnsworth, called me up one day in a very excited state and said, "You got to come here right away and see what I just discovered." And after a long story of setting up the antenna myself, because he wanted to make sure that I trusted this information and knew that there was no, you know, he was so astonished by what he had seen, he wanted to make sure that I had great level of confidence in it. Because as a scientist, you know, we just don't take these things for granted. I mean, it's like we actually, this is a signal that we were analyzing on, you know, millions and millions of dollars worth of equipment that we had at the time in our lab. And so I got up there and looked at this screen, and not only did we find the Lilly waveform there, we found the most amazing things interpolated into this signature, into this signal. I mean, we found double helix signatures that looked just like the DNA molecule. We found other signatures that looked like there were DNA molecule and it then being that waveform and that waveguide. And then around that is the structure of the chromosome, et cetera, all being broadcast, obviously, for a reason. So I suggested that this was being used somehow or other as a biological warfare weapon. And some women who came, wonderful gals who came in and interviewed me for Hole in the Sky, a documentary that they made, you know, went and interviewed the guy who had invented this under contract with the Department of Energy, and asked him if, in fact, this was intentional. Was it a biological warfare? He finally relaxed enough and acknowledged it. So HARP is a very complex beast. The initial funding justification for HARP was to send an electromagnetic pulse into space that would mimic a nuclear detonation, so you could send an electromagnetic pulse against enemy warheads and shut them down, overwhelm their electronics and burn them out and shut them down so their guidance systems would fail and they would plummet into some other place than the target. And that was one of the ways that was justified to Congress. The way, of course, it poses as is this research program in terms of atmospheric auroral research. And it's insidious because I wish it was just that. I really and truly wish it was just that. We were raided right after I published a paper on this. What we had discovered being broadcast by HARP. And we didn't discover, this is in 1994, you have to remember, so this is 17 years ago. We couldn't believe the richness of the signal. And I'm talking about from extremely low frequency all the way up through 38 gigahertz cycles. It was extremely coordinated signal broadcast.
And I hate to do this.
Yes.
Go ahead. Please, I hate to do this, but we got to move on.
Okay. But I just want to say that HARP is really a very sophisticated tool that they're using,
right,
and they coordinate that with the ground wave transmission system and what's coming across the harness of our homes. Unbelievable as it seems. Get a spectrum analyzer, get a signal analyzer, hook it up to ground and neutral, that goes, one that goes down to DC, and just set your window at 0 to 10 hertz even. But don't even set your window. Just let it power up. Go from 0 to 100 kilohertz, and you'll see the Lilly wave across the spectrum. It's
right.
A remarkable thing to see.
Right. So, needless to say, you know, there's a lot that's happening invisibly, and unfortunately, it can be very harmful. Well, let me jump ahead, Adam, to the dovetail with chemicals and drugs. Because I think, you know, one of the important things to understand about this kind of technology is the more chemicals you take into your body of certain kinds, the more susceptible you come. So if you want to reduce your susceptibility and increase your discernment, obviously keeping those chemicals out is really, really important. So maybe if we could just touch on the fluoride and some of the prescription drugs that people need to be aware of.
Oh, sure. Well, the number one thing is don't drink the water. I mean, and don't think that your and don't think that your charcoal filter is getting rid of the fluoride, because it's not. The very best charcoal filters maybe will reduce it slightly, but it's basically not getting rid of your fluoride. And the reverse osmosis will go a long way towards that. So we recommend that everybody just drinks, you know, at least reverse osmosis water. Or smart water, you know, whatever, you know, something that doesn't have fluoride added into it. You can, if you want to brush your teeth with a fluoride toothpaste, that's up to you, but it's basically a poison. And yes, a slight trace amount might increase the strength of the enamel in your teeth, but forget about it otherwise. So, but the thing about the fluoride molecule is, because so many people have it in their systems, you can target it ubiquitously with this, with a broadcast from HARP, for example, or with a broadcast on the ground wave transmission system, or a broadcast through the television. You can literally send a signal acoustically, visually, electromagnetically through the air that makes the fluoride more potent in its function, which is ridiculous, because we're already ingesting, just by the recently, just very recently passed EPA standard, was 4 times toxic levels. And now they're reducing that amount, but they're not taking it out of our water. Fluoride is there to control us, period. That's all. The ADA can go on and on about how this is good for your teeth. There's other things you can do for your teeth. You don't have to be poisoning the rest of your body, making yourself, you know, complicated in all kinds of ways. So fluoride is a very specific targeted molecule of this program. And then you have the common, you know, antidepressants, you know, that the whole spectrum of common antidepressants can be individually targeted on a molecule by molecule basis. And it basically enhances, like if you have a tragic event, you can broadcast this. I mean, after the Los Angeles earthquake many years ago, there were friends and colleagues who I'd worked with through Project Earth for years and years and years, and I still work with now. And basically, they went out and they did samples of the water and discovered that heavy doses of antidepressants were being put into these tanks where people were going and getting their water filled, their water bottles filled. And then there were broadcasts going on simultaneously. This is very Orwellian, but it's beyond Orwell, actually. He didn't even have the imagination. He didn't get there with this, you know. This is way beyond what he imagined. And so very specifically, these things that seem, you know, like, well, you know, if you watch the news, you're going to be depressed, so you might as well take an antidepressant. And, I mean, this is, and then you have the same kind of slumbering, forget about it. Now they're trying to get the FDA to approve drugs that wipe out your memory intentionally. And they say, well, this is really good for PTSD sufferers. Well, HemiSync can take a PTSD sufferer through the experience of the trauma in such a way that they can get to the other side of it. I've seen this with my own eyes many times. I've seen people get remarkable healings from a week of immersion in intentional, benign healing synchronization or healing entrainment. But when you get into this other thing, you're talking about things that make you dumber. You know, it's like all of a sudden right. You go, Jesus, I'm only 38 years old. No, I'm not only 38 years old, but I had somebody say this to me not long ago. He said to me, he says, I'm only 38 years old, and I'm having a really hard time remembering anything. And basically, there's a certain point where we all start noticing that we are not operating optimally. We are not operating at our full capacity. And we're taking all of these things that we just take for granted, like in our processed foods. There's all kinds of weird things. When we drink wine that still has sulfites in it, and I, you know, and being somebody who loves good wine, I mean, you know, it's like if it has sulfites in it, the sulfites actually are there to inhibit oxidation in such a way that they control the fermentation process. And there are naturally occurring sulfites in wine, but sulfites are another, believe it or not, it's another chemical that is systematically targeted with this kind of entrainment. And basically, it prevents the oxidation or the metabolization of the alcohol, so you stay drunk longer and you end up having more toxic metabolites and having a hangover. And it's there. It just goes on and on. MSG, here's another huge one. MSG is a neurotoxin which the FDA continues to say is okay, to even though there's thousands of studies. I mean, there's hundreds of studies. I don't want to exaggerate. There are hundreds of studies that have shown that MSG is a very, very dangerous chemical indeed, but it's still in our food. So you avoid it, and you demand that your food manufacturers stop using it. You avoid BPA, which is a
I think the bottom line is between the food, the water, and prescription drugs, with the electromagnetics, you're creating a cocktail that's very dangerous. And the cocktail is, you know, you don't have to buy into the cocktail, because a lot of these things you can prevent yourself. So
yes,
there is a way to prevent the cocktail, but also to understand that there are other people who haven't, and they're really in a different physical state than you are.
And these are the relatives. These are the relatives we have a hard time reaching sometimes, you know. And
right.
I'm blessed to have
right.
a bunch of relatives that are pretty facile in this area. But I just say pray for those you love and pray for their awakening.
Okay, financial applications, because this is where I really want to get down to. And a lot of what we've covered sort of leads up to this, because as an investment advisor, you know, somebody who's dealt with financial fraud a lot, Adam, I see this being used to encourage people to not think clearly when it comes to their money. And I want to start off with a story, because I was with you, and you were giving me an education on entrainment technology as it's used on the TV. I don't know if you remember, we were watching the, you know, like Bachelorette and Survivor programs, and you were giving me a little education, and it was on that trip that we also went swimming with the whales, and it was the only
right.
time in my life I've ever been in the presence of a whale, and it really is a life-changing event, and I remember as we were sailing back, I literally couldn't talk for about an hour. I just had to, you know, kind of compute the communication that had just happened and the feeling you have when you're in their presence. So I was with the whales. You gave me my little TV entrainment and subliminal programming education, and then I went to the Gold Conference in New Orleans. And I had read stories of some of the Enron presentations where the presentation itself had been quite mediocre, but the analysts walked out saying this company was fantastic. And after reading the descriptions, I said, you know, I think they were using entrainment technology and subliminal programming. It's the only way I can explain it. Anyway, so I open the ballroom doors. Dick Armey is speaking, and then George Tenet is going to speak on national security to these gold investors. There's about 1,000 people in the ballroom. I open the doors, and I get hit with this wave of, like, massive pleasure, but it's like a junk synthetic version of how the whales made me feel. It was very interesting, because you bring up John Lilly and the dolphins. So anyway, I walk in and I think, oh my God, they're using entrainment technology. And I'd never experienced anything this strong. It was very, very strong. And I walked over and I sat down next to someone I knew. And I thought, you know, I really have to keep careful discipline, because this is very strong. And so I'm taking notes, and Dick Armey's talking. And what he's saying is not very, you know, it's just not very impressive. But suddenly I drop my pen and I start clapping with everyone else. And I turn to the guy next to me and say, isn't he wonderful? And then I looked at my hands and I said, what am I doing? What am I saying? I mean, I was that suggestible, even though I knew it was happening. So I thought, oh, this is really careful. I can't stop thinking about it. I need to control my mind. So anyway, George Tenet, who just resigned as the head of the CIA, comes and gives a speech. And the whole point of his speech is the importance of integrating between enforcement and intelligence. And, I mean, it's unbelievably strong, the whole feeling of, you know, you just felt so wonderful. It felt like, you know, you'd had massive amounts of champagne and just, you know, ridden a bicycle 100 miles, and you just felt on top of the world. Anyway, so they were taking questions, and I got up and I walked up and they handed me the microphone, and I said, how do you do, Mr. Tenet? Of course, he knows who I am. I said, I'm Catherine Austin Fitz. Can you explain how it was that the Air Force stood down 4 times on 9/11? And he went into a state of complete shock, because you could tell the reason they felt comfortable taking questions was whatever they were doing, it was so strong. And the last thing he expected was a really tough question. But, you know, and so he didn't handle it very well, needless to say. And a lot of people, it sort of got people out of that state of pleasure. But I saw it there, and I realized, oh my God, if you did this on a political speech, or you did this on, you know, he wasn't talking about investments, but it was an investment conference, and you could see they were trying to influence, you know, 1,000+ significant gold investors. And that's when I realized, you know, this could really have a powerful impact on finances and financial fraud.
Yeah, and that kind of anecdote is exactly what's needed people can relate to this in so many ways, I'm sure. We've all had situations where we've gone to something and we can't understand why we're feeling so very good. Or, you know, and it's like I didn't take anything, you know, I didn't drink anything, and I think this guy's the greatest guy ever. And, you know, if you're feeling that way about Governor Perry or something, you better check yourself, you know. It's kind of like seriously. The party system is so ridiculous at this point because there's been a total usurpation of the will of the people through manipulation.
I would like to point out it must be reinforced. Entrainment technology was not enough to get George W. Bush elected. They needed computer fraud too. So.
Of course, yeah. You know, the electronic voting machines, which we fought against so hard. We campaigned so hard against these things, and somehow or other, they've just kind of infiltrated the system anyway. They're all over the place, even though we know they can be manipulated. It's just unbelievable, you know? It's phenomenal.
One of the questions we got was, let me just read it. Praying that you will give us real examples of what the techniques are so that we can recognize them. Is it public knowledge that casinos pump oxygen in to increase gambling? I didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
You ever heard that?
There's all kinds of things that casinos do. Yeah. I have. I do have a friend who's an expert in it, but I'm not. But I avoid them.
Okay, so let's talk about
at casinos, let me say this. There's definitely a constant broadcast going on. You can go in with a high resolution digital recorder. Take it someplace where somebody knows how to see a signal, and just look for repeating waveforms. Look for anthropogenic waveforms, and look for them in the alpha range. Look for them in the areas of stimulation of the pleasure areas of the brain, and people who are scientists or engineers listening to this who want somebody to check what this is, what I'm saying, and what you're saying about this out. Hook up your instrumentation to the cable of your television. Hook up your instrumentation to your harness of your house. Hook up the instrumentation and see for yourself what's happening in terms of this entrainment. This is not rocket science, but it's very sophisticated.
Okay, so let me move on to another kind of financial fraud issue. One of the things I've noticed is certain sort of internet radio shows focused on investment, particularly of precious metals, or, you know, a variety of different websites, you know, literally can, from what I can tell, they're using this kind of technology through the internet to push, for example, you know, gold's going to the moon, gold's going to 12,500, you know, they have all these wild scenarios, but their sites are always juicy and you feel a lot of resonation that you don't at a lot of the other sites. Is that, you know, is my intuition legitimate, Adam?
Of course, I feel yes, it is, and it's the same with. I mean, if you go to a website and all of a sudden there's music playing, you know, turn off the sound. Is my recommendation. I mean, and I'm saying this with a website that as soon as you see it, there's music playing, and there is no entrainment being used, but you can turn off the sound. That's fine. The fact is that. Yeah, it can be done over the internet. It can be done over your computer just as easily as anything else. I mean, you know, it's something that you just intermodulate with the signal. So, yeah, right. It's not your imagination. And they can make people feel like that, in fact, gold will be some ridiculous price that is even beyond what it's really worth, which is, you know, a lot more than I, you know. But anyway, the fact is that they can convince you that something that you know is bad for you is actually good for you. I mean,
right.
this is really actually, and it happens all the time. So in
another
terms of, yeah,
another
gold,
pattern,
gold may go up to $12,000, And it may not. I mean, at the same way, these people can do this pump and dump, which you illuminated us, you know, when you sat down with Nancy and I all those years ago and just informed us of what was really happening in the marketplace in ways we had no idea about. It's like, this is exactly how people, you know, they're stimulated to buy something, buy. And basically, they really literally know a signal that they sweep through a certain window of frequencies and create a pleasure sensation in your body, as we've talked about over and over again tonight. And it's pleasurable. Let's, like right now, it's the new bubble is gold. So let's pump gold up. And then they have the other signal that goes on, and all of a sudden there's anxiety, you know. So they literally get people to sell, to buy, just like puppets on a string. And
right,
there are reasons.
Yeah, on precious metals, my whole position has always been, you know, I don't know how to day trade it. It's a long-term bull market. Let's buy, let's hold, and let's just stick with a primary trend. And you know, there are interim pumps and dumps along the way. And one of the things that's interesting is, you know, an effort will be made to get everybody to sell their gold, and suddenly I have a rash of subscribers and clients calling or emailing, and it's, you know, it's too much in concert. It's two at the same time. And,
oh,
or,
yeah,
you know, when they're running up and it's not the time to buy, it's the time to wait, you'll get the same kind of sort of pressure. And you can see these campaigns going on, and you wonder, I wonder if they're using subliminal programming, because it's too, you know, it's too strong. It's too much. It makes me nervous.
Yeah, of course. And then, you know, and then they continue to sell paper gold, which is a whole other subject.
Right. The guy's pushing it or selling lots of paper gold.
There's no gold there. Hello.
One other pattern that really makes me nervous, because I've seen it happen, you know, I've experienced it, is use in conjunction with the telephone to kind of market either an investment or a person who then persuades you to go along with that investment. And you're falling prey to the technology, not to, you know, it's not the investment that's attractive, it's the, you know, somehow the personal relationship or the thing. But how do they do it over the phone? I don't understand how that works.
Same thing. It's always exactly a simple process of frequency entrainment. One of the first places I saw in my own life entrainment being used was over the phone of my office when I was CEO and president of a computer company in the early 80s. And I started noticing a weird thing happening when I was on the phone. And I had some friends come over from the University of California, Berkeley, and they brought their instrumentation, and they tested my phone line, and they said, holy mackerel, there's these entrainment carriers on your phone line. So it just came across the same way, frequency, fall, and response, subaudible, you know, subconscious, and you know, dictating my state of mind, you know. And there was an effort at that time to make me, there were people who wanted me to be compliant with certain programs they had in their agenda, and I proved to be a bad candidate, like your listener who asked that question earlier, who doesn't get hypnotized easily, you know. It's like, we don't have to be hypnotized. So,
well,
we should be really clear about that.
I think the key with investments, Adam, is to simply, you know, to always sleep on it, is to just, you know, do the math. Math is a wonderful tool. Do the numbers. And
yes,
just really, you know, I constantly say to my clients that you can't be too careful about the quality of the people you do business with, and you really want to be very careful over a multi-year period and do business with people you trust, or the people you trust know and trust. So it's between math and careful networking of people, you can protect yourself from a lot of it. But you just, I think the step number one is knowing that it exists, and knowing that you need to really sort of do your homework and have intellectual mastery of what you're doing and why you're doing it. And just, intuition is wonderful, but you just need to sleep on it with this kind of technology around. Well, let's
Absolutely. Just do a quick...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and thank God that you're telling the truth about this, and I really want to say this to you and all your listeners. I really am grateful that you are speaking the truth about what's actually happening. I've seen the impact on people who hear you when you say the way this is organized is really organized crime, and that the people of the United States have just had, you know, much more than $15 trillion stolen from us by a sleight of hand under both Republican and Democratic administrations. And I think it's extremely important, and I thank God for you, because you're the only person I know who's really actually telling the truth about this, and I just want to thank you for that.
Well, I appreciate it, but, you know, Adam, I'm still trying to find the truth.
Well, yeah, but that's the beautiful thing about it, too, because we all, anybody who's got any wisdom at all knows that first thing you got to do in the morning is say, I don't know what is exactly going on, you know?
What in the world is going on?
Yeah, it's like every day, I mean, Plato said the first step on the path of wisdom is the confession of ignorance, right? And I think that every morning I wake up and I remind myself, you don't know everything. There's so much you don't know. It's embarrassing. Even though somebody may say, well, you know so much, it's ridiculous. We hardly have scratched the surface. And this is the thing.
I just can't get over the fact that we live on this planet struggling as we do, and we don't know, you know, we know 3% of what there is to know and understand about how our planet works. You know, it's just incredible.
Well, it's
shocking. It is shocking. Let's just run through a recap of some of the things people can do very quickly. Anybody who's known me knows the first three things I say is, you know, turn off your TV, eat fresh food, bank local. I've never met a local credit union or community bank that uses entrainment technology, ever.
That's true.
Maybe there's a first. A lot of those community banks are
being bought out now, and there's a whole movement of that going on.
I know, but I think if we turn off or we're just really careful in discerning about all media, whether it's through the radio, through TV media, just be aware, you know, that this problem exists. I think the other thing is what I found, Adam, is that nature helps tremendously. Just, you know, if I can keep resonating with the cows and the birds and the trees and, you know, and stay close to nature. We were talking earlier today that sometimes this can be stronger in an urban environment.
You remember all the times when you felt totally enervated from being in the urban environment. You've gone off in your car to hike somewhere in the forest, and half an hour after you started hiking, even though you felt like, you know, a wet washcloth when you started, all of a sudden you feel like you're alive, because we resonate on a molecular level with every living thing. And we are literally like tuning forks. We walk through a forest and the vibratory context of those trees, which are living liquid crystalline structures resonating in space, those interact with us in a way that really can go a long way towards erasing the negative effects. We really all need to breathe living air as much as possible. We need to drink living water as much as possible. These things are essential. Like we do green drinks, ground in a 3-horsepower blender out of, you know, the whole fruit and the whole vegetable, so that we get all the fiber, not just the juice. And it's amazing how healing this kind of thing is. Diet, water, what you drink, what you don't drink, what you smoke, what you don't smoke, et cetera, et cetera. We recommend that nobody smokes anything, but, you know, what do I know, you know?
Another thing is we were talking about how, you know, this kind of technology really cuts you off from the divine intelligence, and how it's important to understand there really is a spiritual war going on. And
it's really important.
Yeah,
have control of your own. We need to have control of our own feeling breath.
Right. And then finally, the thing that I keep coming back to is this kind of technology can be used by me to make myself smarter and freer, and it can be used for positive purposes. When we had Dr. Begich on, he talked about that as well. So, you know, I think
it's extremely important.
Right. The Quantron resonance system is an example of that.
It's an extraordinary example of that. And there's still a lot of good material out from places like Monroe Institute. There's some other stuff that isn't so good that has subliminals in it, too. So But we do have remedies, and the main thing that I always say is, as I just said a minute ago, but I want to make sure that I've said it clearly, and that is we all have control of our feeling breath. And whatever our belief system, whatever our belief system happens to be, the fact is that the divine is infinitely present everywhere. And this isn't from one tradition or another tradition. This is just reality in terms of the kind of energy work that we do with technologies tapping into the zero-point vacuum fluctuation background field. We are tapping into something that pervades all time and space and every single person listening here. And we all have access to this field. It isn't dictated to by any organization. You don't have to belong to a specific church to have access to the Buddha nature or to God.
Do you know what Curtis Mayfield said? He said, you don't need a ticket. You just get on board.
Amen to that. I hear that.
Well, there is a lot we can do, but I have to say the single most important thing is we just have to know it exists. And one of the things I would really encourage everyone, whenever you turn on a piece of equipment, whether it's a TV or it's the internet or your utilities or you do business with anyone or you listen to an ad from anybody, you just need to understand what are their incentives. You know, are there incentives to control you, or are there incentives to sell you something that makes them money, or are there incentives to help you be freer and healthier and richer and more successful? And we need to do everything we can to keep away from people who don't have our best interests at heart and align ourselves with people or organizations who really do want to see us succeed. And I think part of being successful in dealing with this stuff, Adam, is just, you know, moving people away who don't have our best interests at heart and surrounding ourselves with people and organizations who do have our best interests at heart. And I know in my life it makes a huge difference. And it's one of the reasons I associate with you.
Yeah, and you know, and I know that in the last election, a lot of people had the illusion that they were seizing control of our democracy again. And
right. This
is just a perfect example of it wasn't the soap they were selling, you know. And we need to somehow or other, we need to immunize each other, keep each other on track. We need to extend ourselves in such a way that we can join in our mutual intelligence and somehow or other resurrect this Lazarus of a democracy of ours, because it's kind of rotting in the tomb right now, and we need to tell it to get out of the tomb and come into the light. And
we really need to say that to
ourselves too.
Right, just at the end of They Live, which really, as you said, is a dreadful B-grade movie. At the end, though, when they turn the entrainment off, it's kind of like everybody comes out of the trance, and that's when real solutions begin.
That's right. And so let's pray that somebody helps us come out of the trance. There's sure a lot of folks trying to push into one.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for joining us on this O'Leary Report. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a big deal to ask Adam to take all this time to do this. He's been very helpful. And so, Adam, it's just been a pleasure, and I hope we can get you back before too long. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you, too.
Have a great evening.
You know, I'm always happy to be with you on this show.
Okay. Okay, coming up, we have on September 1st, Dirty Electricity with Dr. Sam Milhelm, his book, Dirty Electricity, very remarkable book. He's an epidemiologist, long and distinguished career before he retired and wrote Dirty Electricity. Then on September 8th, we have Precious Metals Market Report, clearly tremendous amounts to talk about. Don't forget the new transcript completely done for the top 10 dates in the history of precious metals in America is up at your control panel. It's just wonderful, and I really recommend it to you. And then, of course, the Silver and Gold Calculator, now available at the Apple/iTunes for download for your iPhone. So just remember, you can start a currency, just do it. Anyway, so until next week with until September 1st with Dr. Milhelm, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.